to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
Housing developers right now are severely limited by zoning codes when it comes to residential housing development. To enable more affordable and right-sized housing, we need to enable more housing units to be built on these properties. We need to do that by supporting a deeper affordability density bonus. This will allow our neighborhoods to become much more diverse, equitable, and inclusive. And we need to support Oregon in enacting better housing cooperative legislation. Shared ownership will allow homeownership opportunities to actually increase.
The model that we struck on is a shared equity model of home ownership. Shared equity meaning that the ownership, the various ownership rights in the housing is distributed among a bunch of different stakeholders.
A household is housing cost burdened when it spends more than 30% of its income on housing.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, Lane County, and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's February 12th, 2021 program. Delivering on the American Dream, the promise of affordability. My name is Scott Coltrane, and I'm the City Club president. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page, and our broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 on Mondays at 7 p.m. This program is the second in a three-part series on local housing issues. In today's program, presenters will focus on housing affordability. We will be joined by Jeff Albanese, Ann Fifield, and Dylan Lamar. Biographical information on our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. I would like to thank Karin Knudsen and John Belcher for coordinating today's program. In 2019, Oregon's legislature took the historic step to re-legalize traditional missing middle housing, but the work to build housing diversity and more inclusive neighborhoods has just begun. One promise of missing middle housing is that it can deliver affordability by design, that per unit development costs can come down when we design more efficient housing units and share land costs among multiple homes. In Portland, where the city's missing middle housing implementation was ahead of Oregon's new state law, some community members raised the objection that affordability was not guaranteed by the policy changes. In response, housing advocates crafted Portland's Deeper Affordability Code Amendment, an affordable housing density bonus equivalent to $150,000 subsidy to each project. It turns out that accomplishing affordability is about doing the math and creating a path. There is also more than one path to affordability and housing stability, and Eugene needs several to serve its workforce, middle and lower incomes, and changing household demographics. Cooperative ownership structures, community land trusts, development incentives, and design innovation all have a role to play. Speakers today include Dylan Lamar of the local design development firm Cultivate, Jeff Albanese of Square One Villages, and Ann Fifield from the City of Eugene. They will address housing development strategies, innovative land development and shared ownership structures, and design development approaches that have the potential to deliver increased affordability and create new paths to to long-term housing stability.
Okay, I'm Dylan Lamar. I'm a local architect and developer, and I'll be talking about expanding housing opportunity in Eugene. My background is as a architect of sustainable housing up in Portland, and I did a couple of really nice net zero energy pocket neighborhoods in my time up in Portland. And these were really lovely, beautiful, deeply sustainable projects. But unfortunately, they were very unaffordable. And as I began working as an architect developer down here in Eugene, I really wanted to find a way to bring sustainability to a more affordable price point, which I think is really imperative if we're truly going to achieve societal sustainability. I love old neighborhoods, and developers used to develop very diverse neighborhoods. And I've spent a lot of time over the last few years trying to figure out how to do that again. We used to develop neighborhoods with large single family houses, but also large duplexes and quadplexes, small apartment buildings, small courtyard clusters. And you can see all these still in our historic neighborhoods and in communities across America. Unfortunately, in the 50s, zoning regulations, low density zoning regulations, what we call R1 here in Eugene, came in, and they were really very exclusionary by design. They very intentionally segregated our society and our housing based on socioeconomic lines between single family housing for the well-to-do and apartments for the rest. And over the years, over the decades, that's really taken a toll on our neighborhoods. And it's taken a toll on who is being served by our residential areas, by our neighborhoods. Who's being served by this status quo, and who's being priced out of home or ownership, most importantly. Increasingly, that's in addition to lower income folks, it's also middle income folks, millennials, people of color, smaller households and downsizers who are no longer able to find the housing that's the right size for them. Increasing year by year, an increasing number of people, Eugenians, are priced out of the housing they want and need. So how do we enable developers to deliver not only affordable housing, but also affordable home ownership? Because I think that's tremendously important. It's important to understand how developers operate. They pursue the highest and best use of a property. And commonly we understand that to mean what yields the highest financial return. But that's not all. We also deliver what people want and what they can finance, importantly. But really importantly, when it comes to residential zoning, residential housing development, developers deliver what zoning allows. And with residential housing, that's very restrictive. The highest and best use of current R1 zoning is to build the biggest, most expensive house you can and sell it to the highest bidder. It's quite common in Portland over the last decade to see more and more old 1950s houses, cute little two bedrooms, get demolished in order to build McMansions, three stories, 4,000 square feet or more. And it's all luxury housing, and it's all pricing out diversity, economic diversity with our neighborhoods in favor of just the very wealthy. HB 2001, this missing middle housing regulation, would re-legalize housing diversity. It would allow within the same built volume of that McMansion for a duplex or a quadplex to be developed. It's going to regulate the intensity of the size of buildings rather than the number of units. And that allows us to start building smaller housing units that better match current household sizes. It will begin to re-legalize some of the historic housing diversity we've seen, the duplexes and quadplexes, the little cute courtyard apartments. Housing that we know and love will again be allowed to exist and to be developed anew again. From the research done up in Portland, we've seen that these more smaller units will lead to lower housing costs. So if we take, for example, a single family house in disrepair, under a business as usual scenario, that would get either renovated or demolished and turned into a McMansion. And it would be affordable in either case only to very high income earners. On the other hand, when we're allowed to break that house up into two, three, or four units, we can start to spread the cost of the development across more units and achieve affordability by a wider swath of our citizens. So upper middle income affordability is now achieved. People like teachers, firefighters, nurses, again, can afford housing in their neighborhoods. And that's great. That's starting to turn the tide of increasing exclusivity, which is the trend we're currently on, toward increasing inclusivity. But again, it's not the silver bullet be all end all, because there's still the other half of the population that's being priced out. And this is where we need what we call a deeper affordability opportunity. A deeper affordability principle allows for a density bonus for more affordable housing. It's like a free subsidy for affordable housing, while it also increases the city's property tax base. And the way it works is quite simple. We allow more units to be developed if you build to a affordable housing standard. If you're able to bring enough subsidy to the table that achieves deep affordability to truly low middle income earners. In Portland, they've also allowed you to slightly increase the bulk of what you build if you do an additional unit. So up to an 8-plex rather than a single family house. Now we have 8 very small units, and we can achieve much deeper affordability through this kind of density bonus. And it doesn't cost us a thing. That's great, but what about homeownership? As we increase the number of housing units on a property, the property value also increases. And so if that property is only owned by a single individual, then access to ownership is actually even worse than it was before. You're really only going to have wealthy landowners that will now own property in our neighborhoods. By allowing shared ownership, we'll continue to see a widening inequity between wealthy landowners and renters struggling to keep up unless we provide for shared ownership. Historically, we've seen 2 shared ownership pathways common in America. One is condominiums, which we're more familiar with. Condominiums are great, but they really only work for luxury housing or very large developments due to the development and insurance costs involved. Housing cooperatives are another pathway. These are a proven low-cost pathway to shared ownership that have a long history of supporting affordable housing. And it supports equity among shareholders who will manage their property democratically. Unfortunately, Oregon currently lacks regulations to enable financing of co-ops. And this is a big hurdle that I think is really important for us to overcome. So let me talk a little bit about the C Street Co-op. This is a property I'm developing right now in Springfield. We're about halfway through constructions. And what we're building here is a shared 4-bedroom house and a shared backyard house that will deliver 6 households with permanently affordable homeownership. There'll be cost sharing through a shared housing design, 6 1-bedroom suites. So we've designed, shared housing is a common way that you find affordable housing, right? We probably, a lot of us did this in college. What we did here is basically intentionally design the house to be shared, and we've provided every bedroom with its own private living suite. That's one way we kind of cut through the cost barrier of housing. The other one is I partnered with Square One Villages, and Square One Villages is able to bring some subsidy to the table through foundation grants mostly, that's allowing them to own the land as a land trust and establish a housing cooperative that each of these households will be an owner of. They'll be a co-op homeowner. The shared house up front, it's toward the front of the lot. Like I said, 4 1-bedroom suites. And in the back, we have a 2 1-bedroom suite backyard house. We still have room for trees. We have room for gardens, a rain garden. And it's gonna be a very lovely property. To talk just a little bit about the development structure, because HB 2001 is not yet in effect, and because co-ops aren't fully enabled in Oregon, we had to jump through a lot of hurdles on this project that I'm hoping we don't have to jump through in the future. One of which is finding a construction loan. Most banks won't provide you with money to build a housing cooperative. So in this case, we partnered with a few local private social investors who were willing to loan their money at a below market rate in order to build this. And Square One, like I said, is bringing community grants to the table to help subsidize the land cost. and organizing the co-op landowners. And Jeff will be talking about that a little more just in a second here. So I want to leave you then with just these three key takeaways. Housing developers right now are severely limited by zoning codes when it comes to residential housing development. To enable more affordable and right-sized housing, we need to enable more housing units to be built on these properties. We need to do that by supporting a deeper affordability density bonus. This will allow our neighborhoods to become much more diverse, equitable, and inclusive. And we need to support Oregon in enacting better housing cooperative legislation. Shared ownership will allow homeownership opportunities to actually increase and for residents to continue to hold an equity stake in their neighborhoods. And I think that's extremely important, as does my colleague Jeff, who I'm going to pass it over to now. Thank you.
Thanks, Dylan. So my name is Jeff Albanese, and I'm the program director for Square One Villages. And we're an organization that got started identifying a serious need for shelter for adults experiencing homelessness in the Eugene-Springfield area. And our first project, which grew out of some grassroots organizing back in 2012 and 2013, was an alternative shelter project called Opportunity Village Eugene. And Opportunity Village is a tiny house village composed of 30 kind of rudimentary shelter, basic cabins for adults experiencing homelessness, along with some shared common amenities such as a bathroom and food preparation area, a 30-foot yurt. During our first year of operating Opportunity Village, the project was always intended to be a place where adults experiencing homelessness would have a safe and stable place to be while they were working on trying to get into a more stable housing situation. And what we realized was there really just was not remotely enough affordable housing in the community for the households that we were serving at Opportunity Village. And so we decided to see if we could do something about it and got into developing actual housing. And our first housing project is the Emerald Village Eugene Housing Cooperative, which is located in the Whitaker neighborhood of Eugene. And one of the values of our organization in developing Opportunity Village was we really wanted residents to take the lead in the management of the property that they were living in and sharing. And when we wanted to try and figure out a way to translate that into a housing project with Emerald Village, we identified cooperative housing as a model that really involves the occupants of a multifamily housing project taking the lead and being in charge of the management of the housing that they live in from the everyday to the longer term. And so our affordability strategy, kind of the way that we were going to be able to create, to develop housing that was going to be affordable to those folks that we were serving in Opportunity Village who just really didn't have many options that were affordable to them in the community. The model that we struck on is a shared equity model of home ownership. Shared equity meaning that the ownership, the various ownership rights in the housing is distributed among a bunch of different stakeholders. And the specific shared equity model that we're using with our cooperative projects, such as the C Street project that we're working with Cultivate and Dylan on in Springfield, combines elements of a limited equity cooperative and a community land trust. And those are two shared equity home ownership models that exist independent of one another. And community land trusts divide the ownership of land from the ownership of the house that sits on a piece of property. In conventional community land trust housing, the housing itself is oftentimes just indistinguishable from any other kind of single family home, but the occupant of the home, the household that lives in the home owns just the house that they live in. And the land is owned by an organization called a community land trust. So the ownership of the land is held by a land trust whose purpose is to make sure that the home remains affordable in perpetuity. And it achieves that through different kinds of resale restrictions on the homeowner. Typically, the price that a homeowner can sell their home is determined by a formula that's a part of a ground lease agreement between the homeowner and the land trust that owns the land. And the value of the home that the homeowner can sell it for appreciates according to a formula. So that's controlling price growth in the home, which is really driven by market conditions and bank lending patterns. So that's community land trusts, conventional community land trusts. Limited equity cooperatives are similar in that the resale value of the housing is also determined by a formula, which in the case of a limited equity cooperative is determined within the bylaws of the cooperative. And these are multifamily developments, like an apartment building or like a village of detached small cottages, like our project with Emerald Village. Each household does not own necessarily the particular housing unit that they occupy. Instead, they own a share, an equal share with all the other members of the cooperative in all of the housing stock that's under the cooperative's control. And cooperatives are a form of corporation in which each member or shareholder has an equal equity stake in the enterprise, which in a housing cooperative is ownership of housing. And the board of the cooperative, which is democratically elected by the members, are primarily responsible for the management of the property as multifamily housing. So these are two separate shared equity models of housing that, you know, are tried and true. They exist throughout the country. And we've combined them in a way that complements some of the drawbacks with each of those forms of shared equity homeownership on its own. So a major limitation in conventional community land trust housing is that an individual household still needs to be able to qualify for a mortgage for the home that they're purchasing. And for the low-income and extremely low-income households that we're serving, that's not something that's really within reach realistically. It'd be very difficult for those households to be able to qualify for a home loan in a way that other households with a higher income wouldn't have too much of an issue with. And a limited equity cooperative addresses that drawback of community land trust housing because instead of an individual homeowner having to qualify for a mortgage, the cooperative itself, a cooperative corporation, is able to hold any permanent debt on the property. And that addresses some of the issues with individual households being able to qualify for a home loan. Some of the drawbacks of a limited equity cooperative existing on its own is that the members of a cooperative, particularly if a real estate market has gone up in value, the members of a cooperative can vote to change their bylaws and convert to a market rate cooperative in which the housing, the individual homeowners, when they decide to sell their share in the cooperative and the occupancy rights that they have, they can sell it to the highest bidder that they can find. And this is something that happened with a lot of housing cooperatives in New York City that were originally developed with resources from municipal government as limited equity cooperatives to provide affordable housing. After the affordability controls had expired, a lot of the members of those cooperatives realized that they could all make a whole lot of money if they converted to market rate co-op. And so combining a limited equity co-op with a community land trust and dividing the ownership of the land from the buildings and improvements that the cooperative owns can prevent that kind of market rate conversion from happening, because the limited equity cooperative is in a long-term ground lease relationship with an entity like Square One Villages, which is serving like a community land trust in that we are retaining ownership of the land in perpetuity for the purposes of affordable housing. So that's kind of the affordability strategy that we've hit on with our projects in an effort to create permanently affordable housing that we think is really a no-brainer, and that we think a lot of more public investment should be going into, because precisely because it can guarantee permanent affordability. Some of the other challenges that we're encountering with developing housing like this, Dylan mentioned, a big one is financing. And because shared equity homeownership is not really the norm in this country, the housing market is typically divided between conventional rental housing and conventional single-family homeownership. There are challenges with underwriting and finding lenders who are willing and able to make loans to shared equity projects, largely because it's just different than what they're used to. Historically, housing cooperatives, for example, including limited equity cooperatives, loans to housing cooperatives in this country have performed at way lower default rates than either mortgages made to single family homeowners or to conventional rental investors. And we think that it's, you know, right now is a good time to kind of revisit some of these shared equity strategies for achieving affordability.
I'm Anne Fifield. I'm the Economic Strategies Manager at the City of Eugene. And I've been part of an effort at the city over the last couple of years on a project that addresses housing affordability. And as you all have been listening for the last couple of weeks on the City Club, it's clear housing affordability and availability, it's a long-standing and growing problem in Eugene. One metric that policy wonks likes to use, like in the housing world, like to use, is housing cost burden. A household is housing cost burdened when it spends more than 30% of its income on housing. In 2018, we conducted an analysis of housing costs and affordability, and that analysis found that 58% of Eugene's renter households are rent cost burdened, and 35% of our owner households are mortgage cost burdened. Since that analysis was conducted, there's been a pandemic that has hit some households very hard. Their incomes have significantly decreased, and we've seen housing prices increase. So the portion of the community that is housing cost burden has undoubtedly increased. So the City of Eugene plays an important role to address housing affordability. We have a team of people that focuses on building affordable housing for low-income households. This team manages federal funds to create new housing that's focused on providing housing for households at the lower end of the income spectrum. They work with affordable housing providers like St. Vincent de Paul, Cornerstone Housing, Homes for Good, and others to create housing for households that have incomes at or below 80% of our area median income. The city is also responsible for our land use code. It literally draws the plan for how our community is built. The land use code segregates residential, commercial, and industrial uses, and it's a big driver of what kind of building gets built where. It's not the only driver. Market demand also plays a really, really big role. But the city creates the entitlements for land, which entitle a property owner to use their land in a way deemed compatible with surrounding property. The city also provides essential infrastructure. A parcel of land that has no road access, no water service or sewer service isn't a very useful piece of land. The city and EWEB bring essential infrastructure to private property, making that property developable. The city and EWEB are also on the hook to maintain that infrastructure. Potholes need to be filled. In 2018, the Eugene City Council directed its staff to identify tools and strategies that are available to the city to address housing affordability, availability, and diversity. And a group of staff implemented a project that we called Housing Tools and Strategy. The project included a lot of stakeholder outreach and technical analysis. And in that process, we identified over 80 individual actions that could be implemented by the city to increase affordability, availability, and diversity of housing in Eugene. The different actions fell into four very broad categories. One, increase the supply of affordable housing. That is income qualified housing for very low income households. The second category was remove barriers to the land use code. The third was reduce the cost and time of construction. And then the fourth category we called additional options, which were items that didn't fit neatly into the first three categories. So we've done work to address housing, increase the supply of affordable housing, the income qualified housing for low income households. That's the federal resources that drive the production of that new affordable housing development. It has gotten smaller over time, but the need has grown. And so after this Housing Tools and Strategies project, the city established a local tax to generate revenue to support the construction of new housing for low-income households. The construction excise tax is a tax on the value of new construction. The funds go to the city's Affordable Housing Trust Fund. It's brand new. This fiscal year that we're currently in is the first year that the city will allocate these funds. And it's up to City Council to decide where those funds will go. And its intent is to increase that supply of affordable housing. We've also done work to remove barriers to the land use code. In response to the recent state legislation, the city's removed a number of barriers. Things that have already gone through and are part of the code now are, we now allow accessory dwelling units, commonly known as granny flats or mother-in-law units. Accessory dwelling units are also referred to them as ADUs, accessory dwelling unit. It is one housing type that can be built for a lower cost than a new single family detached home. A homeowner can convert a garage or an attic to an extra unit, or a homeowner can build a small unit in the backyard. The costs can vary widely, but it's one tool to increase the supply of small units that can provide housing for a family member or be rented out to anyone. In response to state law, the city's changed its land use code to allow more ADUs. They are now allowed in all residential zones where single family dwellings are allowed. And also, the city no longer requires on-site parking. For some lots, creating a new parking space added a lot of cost and has likely limited some property owners from building an ADU. That requirement has been eliminated. We can also no longer require owner occupancy in one of the units. Last week on City Club, Terry Harding, a land use planner at the City of Eugene, talked about middle housing. Duplexes, triplexes, townhomes, cottage clusters. In response to state law, the city will be changing its land use code to allow these housing types. These changes to the code that allow ADUs and middle housing will allow Eugenians to construct smaller units all over town. By simply allowing these housing types in all residential areas, we will see more of these units come out of the ground. They tend to cost less than new single family detached housing, which means they'll be more affordable to more households. They also cost less to maintain. Repainting an 800 square foot house costs a lot less than repainting a 2000 square foot house. So it has long-term affordability built into it, that affordable by design idea. The city's also worked to reduce the cost and time of construction. However, there is no single thing the city can do to reduce the cost of construction. The great majority of costs are the materials to build the unit, lumber and drywall. But we are continuing to minimize regulatory costs. For example, the city charges systems development charges. Those are charges, fees that we charge to fund new infrastructure like roads and wastewater treatment, parks and water. A couple of years ago, the city updated its transportation system development charge methodology. And with that update, we explicitly waived the transportation SDC for ADUs, to throw a lot of acronyms at you. That, and so now if you build an ADU, there is no transportation SDC associated with it. We're in the process of updating our parks SDC, and the new one will go on the books in a couple of years. The new SDC for ADUs will actually decline. So if you build an ADU today, you'll pay an SDC for parks. In a couple of years, that will actually be lower than what it is today. Also, EWEB has lowered its water SDC for small units explicitly as part of this effort to lower cost of construction. These creating the opportunity for these smaller housing units makes a lot of sense for Eugene. In that analysis that we did as part of Housing Tools and Strategies, a bunch of data on demographics were part of the project, and that data showed that a third of Eugene's households are single-person households. Only a quarter of Eugene's households have children, but 55% of our housing units are single-family detached. The opportunity for a retired couple to downsize from a mid-sized home where they maybe raised children to something that's easier to maintain, so they have an opportunity to age in place in an easy to maintain home, there's not very many options for those aging households. It's also hard for younger households to find a starter home, something small that they can gradually build equity in. Middle housing will expand these opportunities. By being affordable by design, there will be more of these smaller homes that will create supply that make home ownership a possibility for younger individuals and give older households an opportunity to downsize. That wraps up what I wanted to say, and so I'll hand it back to you, Karin.
Thank you to all of our speakers today.
This has been our February 12th, 2021 program, Delivering on the American Dream, the Promise of Affordability. And a special thank you to public radio station KLCC FM 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Mondays at 7 p.m. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page. More details and information about future programs can be found online at the City Club's website, cityclubofeugene.org. Now, I would like to thank today's speakers for a great program. Dylan Lamar, Jeff Albanese, and Ann Fifield, thank you very much. This concludes today's program. Be well and stay safe.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our Facebook page for more topics. We hope you are inspired to join us for our next podcast episode.